Last week we started a process of looking at the life of David. All I'm going to say about the introductory thing this week is go and listen to last week. And this, that in truth, David's life is a way for us to have access to our own life. We have an enormous capacity for deception. We are, of all people on all things on the planet, we are the most alert to what is going on around us, but often the least alert to what is going on in us. And the story that David has, the stories of his life, are an expression of the external of his experience and his circumstances, which in a way allows us to access our own circumstances and experiences. And the Psalms are his prayers and praise, the process of his internal world as he relates to God and to himself that enables us to be honest and relate well to who we are and how we relate to ourselves and to God and to those around us. And so we look at how David is called. And you can read in 1 Samuel 16, the whole incident of how Samuel comes to, basically God speaks to Samuel and says to him, are you going to mope over the fact that Saul has been a bad king? Are you going to have a long face? Why don't you fill your flask with oil and get going? And basically he says, I'm sending you to Jesse in Bethlehem and you're there to go and to anoint someone to be king from amongst his sons. So he goes to Jerusalem. And we're not going to read all the details of the story. I really would love you to go and engage, because over the weeks, we're not going to look at every detail of David's life, because that's not the point. The point is to provoke you to go and do this yourself, to look at where this fits with your life. I'm just going to highlight certain things. And the one thing this morning is how David is chosen and what that means for us now. And Samuel basically says to God, look, that's pretty tricky. If Saul ever gets to hear about this, I'm dead meat. Because Saul was actually quite an angry fellow. Anyway, the whole thing progresses, and he arrives in Bethlehem, and he greets them, and he gets things going, and they're all on tenterhooks, because when the prophet comes like this, there's normally a massive event, and often he's come to speak some sort of judgment about the way that they're behaving. But anyway, he makes it clear that he's come for a celebration. And he says to Jesse, get your sons out, I want to have a look at them. And the process is actually quite interesting, because Jesse gets his sons and they meet with Samuel. And the first one, Eliab, he's a handsome guy. He's pretty tall, good looking. He's quite imposing, impressive. And what God says to Samuel is interesting, because he says, this isn't the one. This isn't the one that I've chosen for this task to be king. And then he says something interesting to Samuel. He says, be careful. Judge the way that I judge, because I judge the heart. I don't judge on the appearance. We have become accustomed to judging a book by its cover. No matter how often we say, do not judge a book by its cover, the thing we do is we make a summation, and I was taught that you make the first impression is the impression that you make. How do you make that impression? By what you project. The clothes you wear, your confidence, you know. We judge by what we see and what we, our first impressions. And he says to Samuel, clearly God says to him, this is not the one. As good as he looks. And then Abinadab comes along, and Shammah comes along, and he says, not this one, not this one. And so Jesse continues the whole process, and he brings one after the other, in age order. He brings them before Samuel, and Samuel ticks them all off, and God doesn't give the okay. One down to seven. And then there's none. And Samuel's in a bit of a crisis. He says, what is this trick here, God? What's actually going on here? Have I heard incorrectly? And how often hasn't that happened? Where we are convinced that God speaks to us, and we have to look and ask and check and double check whether we are actually hearing what God is saying. Sometimes we get it right, sometimes we don't. But that's not the point we're making this morning. Samuel says to Jesse, aren't there any others? And then he kind of says, oh, yes. Now, how would you feel? The great prophet has come to downtown. There's a party going on. He's going to anoint one of Jesse's kids as king of Israel. And they tick off one to seven, and they completely forget about David. There is another one, he says. He's out in the field. He's kind of the runt of the litter. He's number eight. He's looking after the sheep. So Samuel says, I'm not going to sit down until he's in front of me. And God says, there's your man. We are so impressed. I spoke about this a couple of weeks ago when I said, we are not called to be heroes, but saints. And our sainthood isn't something that we have anything to do with. It's a gift. We are made right with God through Jesus. Even our being chosen isn't something that we do. We are chosen. And the point that I want to make about this whole process of anointing David at this point, it's a long time until he becomes king. There is a huge amount that happens between the time that David is a shepherd. So he gets anointed by Samuel, and then he goes back to the sheep. And there's a whole process that continues, but God has picked him, chosen him. You are chosen. You need to understand that you are chosen. And you are not chosen because, and I don't care what toes I tread on here, but you're not chosen because you're special. Every single human being that God has created is special to him. And he has chosen everybody. Every single human being is chosen. God so loved the world. There's no one that is excluded from the love of God. Every person that walks on the planet has that spark of who God is in them, even if they have completely suppressed it almost. But that's not the point this morning. The point is this, that as you and I are here this morning, we are called by God. We are chosen and anointed. And Paul writes to the Corinthians, and right at the beginning, at the heart of what he starts to say to them, this Corinthian church, which was, when you start to read the letters of Paul to the Corinthians, and we have two of them, it seems that there were four at least. They were less than a ragtag bunch. They were a mixed up, muddled up, shook up world. They were a mess. But the first thing in the first chapter of 1 Corinthians, Paul, I'm going to read this because we need to be reminded of this morning as we look at David, is that Paul says, brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards, not many influential, not many were noble. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things, the things that are not, to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before him. It is because of him that you are in Christ Jesus, who has become for us the wisdom of God, that is, our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, let the one who boasts boast in the Lord. We do not have cause to boast, even if you are noble, wise, well-educated, wealthy. We have nothing to boast about. It's all a gift. The brains you've got, the place that you were born into, is all a gift. Because whatever comes from it is we need to have the capacity to say it was the Lord. Yes, he uses, and we have talents and skills that we are supposed to use, and we need to be faithful with that. I'll come back to that in a minute. But the truth of what's happening here with David is that God is saying, I look at something different when I choose, when I anoint. It's what's going on internally. Israel were chosen. They spent a whole long time in Egypt. God liberates them through Moses. They come out into the desert. They are 1 month out of Egypt. Moses, they come to Sinai, and Moses goes up the mountain, and God speaks to him. And this is what it says. You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings. This is the New American. And brought you to myself. Now then, if you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be my own possession among the peoples of the earth, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words you shall speak to the sons of Israel. So God gives him this loaded instruction. If you will be obedient, you will be a kingdom of priests. Israel has a very bumpy relationship because, don't forget, they have been 400 years in Egypt. And what's happened, they have been culturally conditioned. So what they think of is that the priests, and God, I just want to untangle this slightly, because God called there to be a kingdom of priests, every single one of them, but there were also priests. And what they did was they elevated those priests to what they had seen before in Egypt, where the priests of Pharaoh and of Egypt had been all-powerful. They made choices and decisions and influenced the way things were. A kingdom of priests means that every single person who is part of the family is a priest. And Peter is explicit about this. When you come to 1 Peter 2, verse 5, verse 9, in Revelation, it's in 1 Revelation 1, verse 6. We are a holy nation, a kingdom of priests. A holy priesthood is what it says. And Luther resurrected this during the Reformation in some senses. And he said, in response, in reaction to what the priesthood had become, he said, we are a priesthood of all believers. And that's the kind of language that has come into our church culture now. God intended for Israel to be a kingdom of priests, that they would each of them, because a priest represents people to God and God to people, he kind of is a midwife, if you like. And he said, every single one of you in this nation, Israel, are going to be, they're going to have that role. And another way he puts it in Isaiah, a couple of times in Isaiah, where he said, you will be a light to the nations. When they keep that light for themselves, when they elevate the priests to be these superheroes, when they say, right at the beginning with Samuel, We have rejected God as king over us. Make us a king. What they are doing is they are denying the calling, in a sense, that God has given them to be a kingdom of priests, to be a light to the nation. And there is this battle that goes on throughout the history of Israel and culminates with the coming of Jesus, where he is the light. He is our high priest. He comes to restore to us this thing that every single one of us, when we are called and chosen by God, doesn't matter who you are, as long as you are faithful to use the gifts that you have, is part of his process. The purpose of the priests in the Old Testament were to continue to remind them of what this all was about. And even now, if you go into the New Testament, and there are some who are apostles and prophets and pastors and teachers, their sole responsibility and function is to continually hold everybody's feet to the fire, to say, you're a kingdom of priests. It's your job to be the light of the nations, to introduce people to who Jesus is. You have to take responsibility. I have to take responsibility for my life and the way I live it. And when we are a holy priesthood, when we are a kind of people who are genuinely becoming and doing what we ought to be, when we are obedient, as God says to Moses, then his kingdom comes. And part of Sunday mornings and that sort of stuff is to continually have our feet held to the fire and say, remember, you're chosen. Remember, you're called. Remember, you're anointed. Remember, you're a holy priesthood. Remember what we're here for. And what God is looking at is what's going on inside. Yes, there are all these external things going on in David's life. And we have no idea how he felt about being forgotten by his father and left out by his brothers. But God had a purpose for him, and he has a purpose for me and for Jen and for every single one of us. And there's so much that one could say about 1 Samuel 16, that is, it's just a rich, rich chapter. But here's the most important thing for me. We don't have to be heroes. We are not called to do stuff that we cannot. We are called to be faithful. We are called to just do the thing that is in front of us. We are called to be using the gifts that God has given us to see his kingdom come, to be a holy priesthood. And so, when we look at this, let me just read this here. As you come to him, the living stone, rejected by humans but chosen by God and precious to him, you also, like living stones, are being built into a spiritual house to be a holy priesthood, offering sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. And he continues, but here's the point, is that when we are faithful to do what we are called to do, I cannot do what Tom does. I cannot reach the people Tom reaches. I don't have his gifts. I don't want his gifts, as gifted as he is, because the only responsibility I have is to do something with my gifts and to be faithful with my gifts. The parable that Jesus speaks is about having so many talents. You're given five or three or one. It's not whether you have five or three or one. It's that you do something. It's that we are obedient, as right at the beginning he said to Moses that Israel should be. And when we begin to take responsibility for the circle that we have around us. When we are genuinely living with love and compassion and care and grace and kindness and gentleness and meekness and self-control and faith and hope and love. Did I say love? I'll say it again, twice. We begin to see, when we do it consistently and we are faithful to do it, how God's kingdom breaks in. What does David have to teach us? What do we have to reflect on? What do we have to look at when we look at his life? We need to understand that you can't judge a book by its cover. I do not know what struggles you have. I do, some of them. But even those that I know are only the ones that you let me know that you have. We do not know what it's like to live in your shoes. We also know some of the gifts that you have, but we don't know everything that God is doing with you. But he has a place for you in the economy of his kingdom that is special niche for you and for me. Do we get it right all the time? No. That's part of what the struggle is for us, is that God isn't standing there with a neon sign as we wake up in the morning and saying, these are your three tasks to accomplish today. We have to trust. Because when we do, and when we see the kingdom come, we can say, you know what? It's about him. It's about what he's done. And we love to bask in the reflected glory of that when we see stuff happen. And here's the danger. Here's one of the sins, I think, that Christians fall prey to that are just not sins that people who are not Christians can even understand, is the whole pride of seeing God work in our lives and taking it as though I'm powerful, that when I pray for people, they get healed. Or something happens, people are delivered. The only thing we are called to, and I said it last week and I said it the week before, the only thing we are called to be is faithful with what we've been given. And David grows up and he goes back. Nothing dramatically happens in the beginning. He goes back to the sheep. But there he fights bears and lions. There he uses his slingshot and he gets good at it. And when the moment of Goliath arrives, he's ready. He's not intimidated by the war that he faces. And so my concern is that when we read David's life, we say, where am I in this? What is God saying to me this morning? What is the Spirit energizing for me? Because heaven help us if we do the same thing as Israel did and we elevate some people to be superheroes. Heaven help us if we want to make and elevate people to be kings. The only reason to do that is that it takes away my need to be responsible because I can blame the king or the priest or the prophet. We take responsibility for our lives. And when we do, and we take stock and say, I am where I am. I am who I am at this moment. What is my next step? How do I become part of that holy priesthood? Then David's life is retold. Then Jesus' life is retold through me.